Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chairman. Good afternoon, Vice Chairman and members of the Commission. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to talk about the issue of default service plans beyond 2013. In my comments, I'm going to discuss the transitional nature of the upcoming round of default service plan filings by the electric distribution companies and take a look ahead at what happens or might happen at the end of this transition. It's clear that the Commission views the upcoming round of default service filings as transitional and is forming its policies to accommodate the possibility of long-term changes to the default service model. Consistent with this approach, the recent tentative order recommends that EDCs file plans that will run for 2 years, and that also recommends that EDCs limit or eliminate energy contracts that extend beyond the end of those plans. In addition to that, the Commission recommends that the EDCs limit the proportion of long-term contracts in their portfolios. The Energy Association believes that the Commission has discretion to consider these policies as steps to enhance the competitiveness of the retail market. The Commission stated in its recent final rulemaking order, in which it brought its default service regs into compliance with Act 129, that the language of Act 129 was broad enough to allow the Commission to exercise its discretion to balance a number of policy goals for default service. And we agree with that statement. That was consistent with comments that the Energy Association filed in that proceeding. The prevailing sentiment among the electric generation suppliers appears to be that making default service prices more reflective of current market conditions will enhance retail competition, and shortening both the length of default service plans and the contracts entered into under those plans are steps in that direction. We believe that the Commission may balance the benefits of these policies against the impact that these strategies might have on the stability of default service prices. But designating the next round of default service plan filings as transitional raises some additional issues. What new policy or default service model are we transitioning to? What will adoption of this new model require, legislative changes or regulatory changes? What is the likelihood and the possible timing of these changes? Now, these questions can't be answered with certainty now, but I think it's important to consider them because looking at those questions may influence the Commission with respect to what you do on the transitional issues that are going to be before you in the next round of default service plans. But before considering where the Commission may be going, I think it's necessary to look at where we are now with competition. Under the competition law as amended by Act 129, there are at least two goals that are important to the issues in this proceeding. The first goal is to have a competitive retail electricity market, and that is the issue that the Commission is primarily concerned with in this investigation. But the second goal under the law is to provide a default service price to customers, that is, to borrow language from the Commission's own recent rulemaking order, quote, both relatively stable and also economical relative to other options, end quote. Now, obviously, there's a tension between these two goals of providing an attractive default service price and at the same time trying to enhance retail competition. Now, this point that I just made was recognized in an expert report to Congress dated 2007 that was prepared under the Energy Policy Act of 2005. With respect to retail competition, a report noted that there are two visions of default service that different states are using. The first vision, adopted by most states, is that default service is a regulated service that is designed to provide a long-term alternative for customers. And under this vision, the authors of the report say it's likely that a substantial portion of residential customers will remain on default service. The second vision would establish default service as a bare-bones temporary service that's just a stopgap for customers between shopping for suppliers. And under the second vision, the authors of the report say that competitive suppliers are likely to serve the bulk of customers. In the Act 129 amendments to the Competition Act, the General Assembly clearly adopted the first vision of default service. That is, it's a regulated service that's supposed to be a long-term alternative to customers. You know very well the language of Act 129. It repealed the prevailing market prices language of the Act and replaced it with detailed procedural and substantive requirements that require a prudent mix of different types of contracts designed to provide the least cost over time. Now, the authors of the federal report, given the fact that Pennsylvania has chosen a regulated form of default service, would not be surprised that a large number of residential customers are not shopping. In order for Pennsylvania to change course and adopt the second vision of default service, that is a bare-bones temporary backstop, that is going to require legislative changes to the Competition Act that would fundamentally change the requirements that were put in place 3 years ago under Act 129. Now, in this proceeding, the Commission has stated that it will consider making recommendations of legislative changes at the conclusion of this investigation. And so I think the answer to what lies at the end of the transition is uncertain, because fundamentally, if we are going to go to the vision of default service some folks have articulated in this proceeding, I strongly believe that that's going to require legislative changes, and we don't know, frankly, what the legislature would do. Now, the point of all of that, those are things you're going to get to in the next phase of the investigation, I know, but I think it's also relevant to what you do on these intermediate steps that are going to come up in these default service plans, because I think that uncertainty, frankly, I would say it argues for caution and restraint in considering the plans or proposals by some parties that are going to go further than the steps set out in your recent tentative order. With that, thank you for the opportunity to be here, and I'll look forward to your questions.
Thank you. Now I'd like to recognize Chuck Follum, Director of Rates and Regulatory Affairs for the First Energy Companies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm appearing today on behalf of MedEd, Penelec, Penn Power, and West Penn Power. The companies share the Commission's objective to foster retail competition throughout the company's service territories and the Commonwealth, and we commend the Commission for initiating the retail markets investigation. Post-2013 default service plans have been a major topic of discussion over the last few months in the Retail Markets Investigation Technical Conferences. Specifically, the appropriate length of time for the default service plans beyond 2013 has been a significant discussion item. The companies support the Commission's recommendation in its October 14th tentative order that the EDC should file new plans, albeit that will run for 2 years, rather than suggesting that the EDCs file shorter-term bridge plans or extensions of their current plans. The companies believe there are barriers to implementing a one-year bridge plan or a one-year extension of the existing default service plans. As a practical matter, the companies believe a plan that takes 9 months from filing to entry of a final order should cover a period longer than the amount of time it took to develop and litigate it. Given the number of parties actively participating in the Retail Markets Working Group and the wide variety of positions taken by parties in the meetings, it is very likely that the next round of default service cases will be hotly contested and heavily litigated. Recognizing the significant amount of time and resources that will be spent on these proceedings, it is logical that the outcomes of these cases should provide direction for longer than 12 months. The companies believe that the appropriate length of time for the default service plans beyond 2013 is a period of 36 months in duration. Our team has participated in the development, litigation, negotiation, and implementation of 4 previous separate default service plans, and as we speak, is in the development phase of our 5th plan to be filed this month. The default service plan of 36 months has several advantages. First, the time and expense associated with developing, obtaining approval of, and implementing a default service plan is not immaterial. An EDC's preparation support of a default service plan results in an expense that is ultimately borne by its default service customers. Significant time and expense is incurred as well by interveners and the Commission. The companies believe that a 2-year default service plan may result in a period that is too short, causing all parties to unnecessarily spend default service plan related time and money on a more frequent basis. Moreover, a shorter term may not provide a reasonable opportunity to learn from the actual operation of the default service procurements and incorporate that experience in future plans. For instance, if default service plans were to run for only 1 year, the program filings for the subsequent set of plans would need to be filed within a month or two of the order issued approving the current plan, leaving an endless cycle of litigation. Likewise, if default service plans were to run for only 2 years, they would need to be filed by November, the year in which the current plan would be starting. By that time, the two-year plans approved in the previous case would provide only 5 months of experience and therefore may not provide a realistic opportunity to implement the lessons learned based on actual experience. This is especially important if the Commission approves new programs such as a customer referral program and opt-in auctions for inclusion in the next default service plan. The extra year afforded by a three-year default service term would enable the companies to base their subsequent plan filings on about 1 year's experience associated with the current plans. Finally, it is important to note that the companies have made commitments in the partial settlement approved by the Commission when the First Energy Allegheny Energy merger was approved early this year that limit the company's ability to file a one-year plan extension. Specifically, each of the companies committed to propose in the default service filings for the period beginning June 1st of 2013 that they would each use the same structure for the price to compare or PTC. In addition, the companies must file changes in their next default service plans to their supplier master agreements. These changes will allow other parties to understand the details of the process and the results of the procuring default service power suppliers occurring after June 1st, 2013. For these reasons, it would be the company's preference to establish a three-year time period for default service plans going forward. However, in light of the Commission's ongoing investigation and its recommendation for a two-year program within the tentative order, the companies are willing to adopt the recommendation that two-year plans be proposed. As such, the companies anticipate proposing plans that are 2 years in duration in the upcoming filing yet to come this month. The companies intend to include a customer referral program and an opt-in auction in their upcoming default service plans filings, along with the appropriate cost recovery mechanisms to allow for their funding. We believe that we can design and propose a customer referral program and an opt-in auction that will be successful and beneficial to customers and which do not rely on short-term teaser rates or marketing gimmicks. On the other hand, I would note that companies have concerns regarding certain other of the Commission's recommendations described in the tentative order. For example, the companies do not support expanding hourly pricing to the medium-sized commercial and industrial customers, which are generally customers with demands greater than 100 kW but less than 500 kW. We have estimated that installing the necessary metering to offer real-time pricing default service to customers down to 100 kW would require about an $8.5 million investment to install the interval meters, plus an additional $1.4 million annually for communications costs to support those meters. This investment simply is not practical in light of the upcoming smart meter implementation plan filings and future deployment. We appreciate the opportunity to participate in this en banc hearing and submit comments in this important proceeding and look forward to working with the Commission and other interested parties on these important issues. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'd like to recognize Richie Hudson, RESA chairman.
Thank you, Chairman Powelson. First of all, I'd just like to say that there's been a lot of discussion about the next phase of default service plans, the June 1, 2013 time period and beyond, and the bulk of my comments will focus on that. But I did want to lead in with a recognition that we should not lose sight of the in-state policy objective, which is, can we build a better mousetrap in terms of default service? And in that regard, RESA continues to support exploration of dramatic restructuring of the default service role in a manner that allows that default service role to be fulfilled by a competitive EGS. With that said, I'll move on to the transitional default service plans that post June 1, 2013 time period. We agree with many of the recommendations taken in the tentative order on this issue. In particular, we support the Commission's recognition that the next round of default service plans should not hinder the ability of the Commission or stakeholders to implement a variety of pro-market policy reforms that are under consideration in the retail markets investigation. We agree with the recommendation that the next round of plans should limit or eliminate altogether any contracts that extend past the default service plan period to allow greater flexibility to adopt a different policy with respect to default service in the future. We agree with the recommendation that the default service plan should limit the use of long-term contracts and rely on any long-term contracts that have already been procured instead of procuring additional long-term contracts. And we agree with the recommendation to expand hourly pricing and more market-responsive pricing in general. In particular, with regard to hourly pricing, I would note that that policy has been very effective in Pennsylvania and in other states at promoting the development of a very robust competitive market. We also support the recommendation that the next plans should incorporate pro-market policies, such as the retail opt-in auction that was discussed on the previous panel, and customer referral programs. But we would ask the Commission to clarify that decision to incorporate these policies in the next round of default service plans should in no way preclude implementation of these pro-market policies as soon as practical in 2012. I wanted to speak briefly about the issue of existing wholesale contracts. There's been a lot of discussion on this issue in the stakeholder process. And RESA fully recognizes the concern and the responsibility that the Commission has to create an environment of regulatory certainty and the desire to not dramatically impact holders of existing wholesale contracts. But we would caution against establishing a bright line test for this issue. The primary driver to this concern is the fact that certain policies can increase overall migration levels. But the potential for a policy to increase overall migration levels should not, in and of itself, prevent an implementation of those pro-market reforms. And I would point to a lot of work the Commission has already undertaken, such as establishing PA Power Switch, more streamlined EDI rules, broad customer education. All of these initiatives have the potential to increase and have actually increased overall migration levels. But I believe we can all agree that those are all very positive developments, and they should have been implemented despite the fact that they did increase overall migration levels. So I see that I'm out of time, and I'll conclude my remarks here. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd now like to recognize Michael Meath with the Pennsylvania Energy Marketers Coalition. Michael.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to be brief, because we have so many speakers, I will just mention a couple of very key points. This is where the rubber hits the road. In terms of trying to determine what plans should look like on beyond 2013, and we believe that as you are starting to formulate in your own minds what that perhaps should look like, we need your guidance. We need to know if there is an end state that you might have in mind, that you share that with us. In particular, it might be appropriate to not just recommend that utilities avoid contracts that overhang the recommended two-year transitional time frame, but actually to get more specific about that and to order that those overhanging contracts not get entered into at all unless there's a demonstration that they are necessary to meet not only the statutory obligations, but also the true practical need. One of the concerns we've seen in other states is when, as markets try to transition to competition, if long-term supply contracts continue to be put in place, you just can't get there from here, and we know you know that. Secondly, it's important for us to know or have an inkling of where you think the ultimate destination might be, because to be blunt, suppliers are in the same boat. They have to start thinking about if they're going to be asked to be in a position to provide default service. And just to be clear, because I know some in the past have thought that we may not want a default service at all, we recognize that there needs to be a default service. We just believe that marketers probably have the ability to fill that role as well and perhaps at some level, at some point in the future, even better than the utilities have. Not because the utility has done a bad job. Utilities have done exactly what they've been instructed to do, and that is construct a highly reliable system. But that in terms of a supplier strategy for the next 4 years, how are they going to approach this, and how might they approach the marketplace? Markets thrive on certainty, and certainty is what we're all seeking today, I think, even though that's not necessary. Third and final point, really what we are about with all of this is to let the EDCs focus on their core competency, the safe and reliable transmission and distribution of energy. And as we move forward, we've made a lot of progress, we've got a long way to go, let the EGSs focus on what they're good at. Thinking of these creative things like what Mr. Banks mentioned earlier of maybe an electric car should be given away. Those kinds of enhancements that can really get people to start think about their energy. The single most important way, finally, to bring about a new, more competitive marketplace is really to eliminate the old one. But we can't do that until we very carefully address the issues that were brought up today by the OCA, by PULP, and by AARP, and we recognize that. And so it might be auctions to begin to transition some of the marketplace. It might be a supplier of last resort model. And it might be a premium on default service that gets applied. But it doesn't mean that we have to act rashly without keeping consumer protection and reliability as paramount. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'd like to recognize Corey Buzinski, Vice President and General Manager for the North American Operation for Direct Energy. Corey, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, and to your dedicated staff for your nationally recognized leadership in electricity competition. It's exciting to take part in a process that's directed at creating an even more robust, sustained, and real competitive environment for all Pennsylvanians. Direct Energy is committed to Pennsylvania's growth and serves the electricity and natural gas needs of thousands of Pennsylvania resident households and businesses every single day. We're continuing to create Pennsylvania jobs, economic and community development, and innovative products and services, including our most recent Free Saturdays product in PPL. This is due to the progressive retail competition policies fostered by the Commission. There's been commendable progress in shaping the competitive market, but the market has not yet reached its full potential. We want to be a partner in making this vision a reality. So what is the potential of the retail electric market in the Commonwealth? We believe the first step will be achieved when most customers receive generation service from the competitive market, and that a backstop, rather than a first stop, default service is provided by an entity other than the utility. This vision would not eliminate default service. Contrary to the claims of some, default service would continue. It would just be provided by one or more entities other than the utility. This would permit the utility to focus on providing safe and reliable service. Residential and small business customers should receive additional consumer education and be encouraged to participate in interim measures, many of which you've already identified in your tentative order. We urge the Commission to work to move in this direction by putting these interim measures in place in 2012, because receiving generation service from the competitive market gives customers the best opportunity to save money, enjoy a variety of value-added services and products, and have the benefit of true choice. So what about beyond June 2013? While the Commission appears to be seriously considering major reforms to the present system, it has tentatively directed that the utilities file bridge plans for 2 years to account for the need to obtain legislative authorization or affirmation of default service reforms. We urge the Commission to set up a structure to permit these reforms to happen as soon as possible. Such a structure will incent capital investment and economic development by competitive suppliers while advancing full competition. Accordingly, Direct believes that the Commission should address three issues in its final order. First, it should clarify that the utilities must file default service plans with sufficient flexibility to permit the implementation of longer-term reforms sooner than June of 2015, if possible. To get this greater flexibility, the utility should be directed to file one-year plans with ability to extend the procurements if we find out that it's required. Second, the bridge plan should explicitly reaffirm that any wholesale suppliers electing to supply full requirements power for default plans are not guaranteed any particular level of load. Third, the plan should contain provisions that would explicitly permit the assignment to alternative default service providers or otherwise provide certainty that such contracts will be honored. In conclusion, Direct Energy is gratified to see the progress being made in Pennsylvania, but as default service plans are established for 2013 and beyond, care must be taken to ensure that additional reforms can be incorporated. Customers should not be forced to wait 2 years for intermediate reforms or 4 years or more for full competition if we can enact that much more quickly. Today, we've offered free Saturdays and bundled service offerings assisting customers to better manage their energy usage. Further, we've supported our communities in a vast array of ways. Based on the actions you're considering today and with appropriate reforms to the existing market model, the future will likely result in even more benefits for the Commonwealth. You clearly have some very challenging decisions to make over the next few months. To provide some perspective, I'm going to leave you with a quote from Arthur Schopenhauer, who I'm sure you all were expecting. All truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. Third, it is accepted as being self-evident. Thank you for the opportunity to appear here today.
Thank you. Now I'd like to recognize Andrea Williams, Senior Director of Regulatory Affairs and Strategy for NRG Energy. Andrea?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, thank you again. I'm well aware of the time, so I won't reiterate the points that my fellow panelists have already addressed. One of the great things, I think, as we look to beyond 2013, and we're sort of at a point A to get from 2013 to 2015, and then what? NRG's comments clearly say that we believe the best structure is to remove the utility from the provision of from that default service role. And if nothing else, one thing that that will do is the comments about cost recovery, rate recovery, how much burden on ratepayers, those kind of things, as we see from other markets that we can look to where they've done that, go away. So if there's at least some light at the end of the tunnel, it's that the gold-plated systems that you referred to earlier, Chairman Paulson, will be a thing of the past. Similarly, reliability isn't compromised. We're well aware that the utilities have that core competency, and we have no intention of trying to remove them from that. What I'd like to address, though, is that the EGSs have the core competency for innovation, billing, customer service. Those are the things that we do in many markets today, and we should have the obligation to deliver the best-in-class services to the customers here in the Commonwealth as well by provision and by providing the default service. That's something that we can do. This, of course, needs to occur in a well-planned out process. This isn't something that by any means we think should be hastily done. Customers should be well-informed. They should know the date certain. They should know who, what, when, all of those things that can be achieved because we have some time on the horizon to prepare them for this adjustment. But it's the right thing. It's the win-win design for customers. And we see from success in other markets that you actually can have 100% of customers participating in competitive markets for a variety of value propositions to meet their needs. If you start, as Mr. Callaher said, by removing the status quo bias and enabling suppliers that are best suited to provide a lot of these services to customers. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I'd like to recognize Tom Butler, Director of Retail Business Development for Dominion Retail. Tom, welcome.
Thank you, Chairman and Commissioners. I'm sorry, I'm not speaking in the microphone. Dominion Retail really appreciates the opportunity to comment. We've been participating in 10 states for many years selling electricity. And for us, I've seen all kinds of default service plans, but we really think that with regard to our comments on the default service plans.
One moment, please, Mr. Butler. And I would ask you to please speak closer to the microphone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
We think your tentative order really hits the mark in terms of the default service plans, what should be done in this transition period. Up to this point, adoption rates have been slow with the customers. You know, we're at the early phases of development of the competitive market. And we think another phase of the default service plans is a good step. And then during that phase, we could figure out what the end state would look like. As far as the components of the default service plan that was outlined in your tentative order, We think that it allows for time for the market initiatives to work. It allows for the choice market to develop, allows the utilities to comply with all the rules. I think it's a very pragmatic order. What we would go one step further and say that we like the diversity in some of the utilities' default service plans as they're set up today. And we like specifically like Duquesne Light's plan, where they actually offered a fixed rate for multiple years. That was a target that we could compete against. Those type of things, and having one default service plan for all the utilities for us would we don't think would be a good plan. We like the diversity across the state. As far as the process, we think it's a good idea. It's not a bad idea to let the utilities clone their current default service plans to as great of a degree as they can. But we do like your recommendation to eliminate the tails and minimize the block purchases in the long term. I would like to echo some of my other panelists' comments that really we think the next step is we have to figure out what's next, what is beyond. If this is a transitional service default service plan, what is the next step? What is the picture going to look like down the road? How can we eliminate and work the status quo bias that's out there? How can we get new customers signing up with suppliers right away versus going directly to default service? Because as a supplier in this situation, it's always an uphill battle for us. We're always losing a certain amount of our customers, and it's always an uphill battle for us to get customers. So we're always working against default service. Thank you for the time to comment.
Thank you. Now I'd like to recognize our consumer advocate, Sonny Papowski, for some brief comments. Sonny?
Thank you, Chairman Paulson. In looking beyond 2013, let me confine my remarks to residential customers. And first, I'd like to agree with Terry Fitzpatrick. Unless the General Assembly repeals or significantly amends the default service provisions of Act 129 of 2008, I think the guidance is pretty clear and the future is pretty clear as to what default service plans generally should look like. And I would think that in 2013, my working assumption is that the plans filed by most of the companies will look a lot like the plans that are in effect today. That is, some combination of full requirements, load following contracts, varying lengths and sizes, along with hopefully some block and spot market purchases, as well as I think some longer term contracts, particularly for alternative energy credits, consistent with this commission's policy on long-term contracts for alternative energy credits. In the comments that we filed with the commission in response to your tentative order on October 14th, we did not object. In fact, we support the commission's proposal for basically a two-year length of the plans. We think that's a reasonable length in the current situation. What we don't agree with, though, is that all contracts approved during that two-year period should come to a halt on May 31st, 2015. We think that's very risky. One of the positive attributes of our current default service model, and this point was brought out by a number of the EDCs as well in their comments, one of our positive attributes that we frankly insisted on is what's called the laddering of contracts. Different sizes, different lengths, they begin and end at different times, including times that may extend beyond the length of the current default service plan. We think this laddering approach is critical to avoid the kind of situation, for example, that we faced in Pike County at the end of 2005, when 100% of all their future supplies had to be bought at what turned out to be the worst possible time. We don't know whether June 1st, 2015, none of us in this room know whether June 1st, 2015 will be the best of times or the worst of times to be buying electricity in the competitive wholesale market. But the benefit of laddering, a prudent mix of contracts over time, is that we don't have to put all our eggs into a single one-time basket. And therefore, we've been able to avoid or reduce the risk of major price spikes. Now, as you've seen from the today's panel presentations, particularly by Ms. McCluskey of my office, we have worked diligently and in good faith throughout this process to support the Commission's efforts to develop voluntary programs of consumers, consumer education and voluntary programs where more consumers can get the benefits of competitive retail generation. We've worked with the EDCs and the EGSs to develop a number, to work on a number of programs, and we will continue to work on those programs. Where we draw the line, though, I think, at least what we're not supportive of are proposals to take action that we think are directly contrary to the stated intent of Act 129 of 2008. We're just talking 2008. The stated intent that customers who do not switch, who do not choose, have a right to receive stable default service that is secured from competitive wholesale markets at the least cost over time. For the life of me, don't see the benefit of forcing our electric utilities out of the default service role, since those companies generally are buying power at wholesale in competitive markets. We're not talking about taking their own old power plants and selling them to customers at a premium. We're talking about companies that are going into competitive wholesale markets, buying power at those competitive prices and passing those costs on to customers with no profit and no markup. We support the Commission's current regulations, which are on file with the Commission regarding default service. We recognize the legislature does permit alternative default service providers, but the Commission regulations say that that will only occur, that you will only do that if it is, quote, necessary for the accommodation, safety, and convenience of the public, and only after, quote, an evaluation of the incumbent EDC's operational and financial fitness to serve retail customers and its ability to provide default service under reasonable rates and conditions. I don't think there's ever been any question as to the quality of the service that's being provided by our major utilities in terms of default service. Finally, we don't support the auctioning off of retail customers on an opt-out basis, where customers would have to take affirmative steps to get back to default service, which we think was a contradiction in terms, that is, having to take steps to get to your default service, and where the remaining default service would be a spot market service with retail adders that would make default service more volatile and potentially more costly than what we customers have today. So, in sum, we look forward to working with the Commission and the interested parties to develop the types of enhancements to the competitive retail markets that we've been talking about all day, most of the day today. But we believe those competitive enhancements must coexist with our existing statutory structure, which also includes default service at the lowest cost, stable default service at the lowest cost over time. And again, I'm only talking about plain vanilla default service. With competitively procured plain vanilla default service, all Pennsylvania consumers can receive the benefits of the competitive generation markets that resulted from our legislation in 1996. And they can get those competitive benefits whether they shop or not at retail. But as the actions of more than 1.1 million residential shopping customers have shown, the competitive retail market is providing additional choices and benefits that many consumers have found attractive, and that number is growing every day. Through the products of this investigation, it's our hope that we can provide many additional choices and benefits to consumers who wish to participate in the competitive retail market while preserving the statutory protections of competitively priced, stable default service for customers who wish to stay with or return to that service. Thank you.
Thank you. Our last presenter is Ms. Jane Burmeister with AARP.
Thank you, and thank you again for the invitation to appear here today. Looking beyond 2013, AARP believes we should not lose sight of the fact that electricity is an essential service that's necessary for safety, health, and economic welfare. Therefore, it's necessary to have default service to ensure that consumers have access to stable, reasonable, and affordable electric service when they need it. With access to default service, consumers then have the confidence to go out in the market and shop around for alternative plans based on price, service, or any other innovations that a competitor may want to offer. AARP supported the provisions of Act 129 in 2008 that have been talked about, repealing the linking of default service to the wholesale market price and requiring adequate, reliable, affordable service, with giving consumers the benefits of price stability over time. As we stated in our comments on the tentative order, we do not agree with suggestions that EDC should procure short-term contracts only after 2013. As has been stated by Mr. Popowski, that this could be very detrimental for consumers. Default service plans should take advantage of today's market, and if it's beneficial for consumers to lock in longer-term contracts at this time, then we think that consumers should not be denied that benefit. So in conclusion, I'm very mindful that I'm the last speaker. AARP supports the provisions of Act 129 relating to default service. These are essential to ensure that consumers are not put at risk while also giving them the option to choose an alternative supplier. And we've been active in this ongoing proceeding because we do want to help the state improve the functioning of the market where it's possible to ensure that consumers who shop and those who switch can do so in the most efficient manner and achieve all the benefits that are possible for them to achieve. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize Commissioner Whitmer for purpose of her questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually don't have any questions, but I do have just a couple of statements I wanted to make. First, I wanted to just say that, you know, I think that the least cost over time is something that we can really debate on what that ultimately means, and whether or not we need to have some statutory changes. You know, perhaps that's something we have to take a look at. But I don't necessarily think that some of the things that people are talking about with least cost are necessarily the only way to look at that issue. I'm also getting a little tired of Pike County being trotted out all the time. You know, I think we certainly have to learn from the past, but the past can't paralyze us from moving forward and looking at things differently. And then just lastly, I'd like to remind folks that, you know, to date, the RMI has not proposed eliminating default service, but maybe just looking at different ways of having that default service other than the EDCs. And with that, I'd just like to thank all of the panelists who were here today. It really is very helpful to all of us to hear your different perspectives.
Thank you, Commissioner Whitmer. Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to associate myself with the comments of my colleague, Commissioner Whitmer, and add that and also echo the comment of my colleague, Commissioner Cawley, that we're making a valiant effort here to get it right. We are promoting retail competition because, in my personal opinion, I believe it will deliver the best benefit to all consumers. And the status quo is no longer acceptable. So with that, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Commissioner Gardner. Vice Chairman Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, thank you to our panelists. I don't have questions at this time. Thank you.
Great. I do. And let me start. Commissioner Cawley said I could have all his time. So I guess we're going to have a debate about your mousetrap, Mr. Popowski, which is known as the blended portfolio approach to procurement versus spot market approach. And I would encourage you to do that analysis, because if we did that analysis over a decade, we would prove that least cost over time is not what you advocated in Act 129. Let me also share with you the issues that this commission and my colleagues deal with under some of the prescriptive nature of Act 129. One is, you know full well that electric distribution companies should not be offering time of use rates to customers. We agree. And I hold you to your comment about vanilla product offering. You also know about the issues we're dealing with now around migration riders associated with, again, the prescriptive nature of Act 129. So we can have this debate, But I think it's a little disingenuous to say that everything that's been outlined in Act 129 has been a promotion of electric competition here in Pennsylvania. In my humble opinion, there's some hindrances there. And to our representatives from the AARP, I think you should do that analysis. My colleague and I think all of us, we're not trying to undo the current default supply model. My father is a senior citizen, and I get my AARP mailers. Unfortunately, you're sending them to my house. And I read what you put out there, and you guys have no problems promoting life insurance products. You have no problems promoting car insurance products to customers. And we just would encourage you, because I think seniors across this Commonwealth could be educated in saving real dollars on their monthly electric bills. And I think you're doing that. I just would wish you would embrace the dynamic or the model more aggressively. I share with you, again, just some analysis from today's hearing. And I reflect back to our former colleague, Mr. Hanger, who was our former Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection. And I just want to go on record here with my presenters. First is, I think we all agree that the current policy should end of assigning customers to default supply. Is that something you all agree upon? Because I heard it here today, that the current policy should end of assigning customers to the default supplier automatically whenever a customer moves into a service territory or new address within a territory. We all agree to that? Anybody want to take that question?
I would agree that if it can be done by the by the company, when a customer signs up, that customer should certainly be able to sign up with an EGS as soon as possible.
Okay. The second point that I think he made that is germane to our hearing here today says, whenever a customer moves into a service territory or moves within a service territory, the customer should be given a list of all suppliers with pricing information and asked to choose one on the list. Up to 15% of the customers each year should embrace this change alone, and he believes it'll increase in the next few years the number of customers shopping. You agree with that?
Well, I would say it depends on the circumstances around that. As I believe Ms. McCluskey talked about, if consumers are pressured in a phone call when they're trying to get service connected, they may not make a good choice.
But you say pressured. You are aware we have codes of conduct for how retail energy suppliers are supposed to conduct themselves.
And I don't even mean to imply that it would be inappropriate pressure. It's a time pressure. I want to move. I want service. I might not think through my decision. So if consumers had the ability to, you know, if we're sure that they're not locked into a contract with a penalty and they could take time afterwards and change, that would be appropriate. But if a consumer has to make an on-the-spot decision that locks them into a contract with a significant cancellation penalty, I think that's a real problem and will hurt the market in the long run.
But simply put, I mean, there's disclosure, there's truth in marketing. Again, going back to codes of conduct, Commissioner Cawley mentioned the revocation of the supplier's license here in Pennsylvania. I mean, we don't just willy-nilly approve an EGS coming into the marketplace. In fact, I know my colleague to the left here has done a lot of due diligence, and we've put handcuffs on certain retail energy suppliers that have had bad track records in other jurisdictions. So, I mean, does that give you the peace of mind that there's oversight?
Even with everything, I'm not inferring any ill will on anyone's part. There's been a lot of discussion here about a variety of offerings to consumers. And what the offering that's right for Sunny is not necessarily right for me. And our goal is to make sure that the consumer gets the product and service that is right for them. Because if you get them in one that ends up costing them more money and making them unhappy, that's bad for the market in the long run, in addition to being very bad for that customer. So my concerns go to ensuring that consumers have the ability to make the best choice for them at that time and are not just frantically thinking, oh, I have to choose somebody right now from this list or I can't move into my new home. So yes, I think it can be done, but I think we need to be aware of the pressures that consumers are under in making these choices and the considerations that they need to think through.
Okay, good point. Terry?
Mr. Chairman, can I just, this might be a more general response and it might not satisfy you, but I think on the part of the electric distribution companies, we're cooperating in this investigation. I think there's a number of things the commission can do to enhance competition, and I don't doubt that at the end of this proceeding, there are going to be things that help the situation. At the same time, I mean, you hear here today, there are some strong views on both sides from different camps, from the competitors who want to get competition going, understandably, from consumers and other groups who have other concerns, who are more worried about protecting folks. And I think, you know, the electric utilities are sort of in the middle on this. And you have a very tough job. You have a very tough job because you're trying to balance some things in your law. And as I said, I think there's some tension in the law between the default service provisions and the competition provisions. And I guess the thing, you know, that I would say based upon that is that maybe one good philosophy is that I understand there's a desire to get things done as quickly as you can, but at the same time, I think it's good here to keep in mind the old adage about measure twice and cut once, because if things aren't done right here, if they're done too quickly, if they're not thought through, all the details, and the details are important on any of these things that we're talking about, you know, we're going to end up with uncertainty, things that don't work. You know, we could end up in court battles about things, and you know, that'll be unfortunate because, you know, regulatory certainty is important to us, knowing where we're going, having clear rules. So, you know, we're working with the commission on any of these number of things that you're talking about to try to come up with ways that make sense, get as much consensus as possible, and have some clarity so we know where we're going moving forward.
So in terms of your theme of regulatory certainty, how would you assess this commission?
I think this commission has a great record on regulatory certainty, and that goes back a lot of years, Chairman.
So what's not to think we're going to get, and I don't know how many times I've said this to you and your members, this is not a sprint, it's a marathon. We've been very consistent in what we've delivered in terms of messaging, in terms of tentative orders out the door, in terms of bringing all interested parties to the table via our ACMO group, and I'm just scratching my head thinking that, you know, your members are, you know, living back in 1995 mode and not willing to embrace these changes. I want to go back to a point you made, Mr. Popowski, in your testimony, that there's not issues, that our wires and poles companies aren't making money off the default supply. Are you willing to hold true to that statement?
If you're talking about Duquesne, if I'd had more time, what I was going to say was that there are two companies that don't have Act 129 plans that go along with the predominant plan. One is West Penn, which was filed before Act 129 was passed. The other is Duquesne, which Tom Butler thinks is the preferable method, but has a fixed price. Duquesne takes the risk of, and what I was going to say was, if you read, I'm sure you did, if you looked in Duquesne's tentative order comments in response to the tentative order, what Duquesne said is that they, in fact, are going in Polar 6 to going to move to a reconcilable price using the wholesale market. So I say, if I had to guess, Duquesne probably lost money from 2007 to 2009 when they stayed with their fixed price, even though prices were shooting up in the market, if you remember, in 2008 and 2009, even though they were getting hit with RPM costs at that time that weren't anticipated when they entered into that fixed price. So they probably lost money during those 3 years, and they probably are making money now because their current price is high. And I hope that a lot of customers take Mr. Butler's advice and switch to save money. And that's why the first four-fifths of this discussion was about how to get customers to switch.
Thank you. Again, I want to thank the panelists for joining us. Really, really good presentations here today. And look forward to our third en banc hearing, which I think we're going to be scheduling in the February or March time period. So thank you very much. Everybody have a good evening.
Mr. Chairman, may I just add one thing?
Excuse me, Judge.
This has been a formal proceeding with an official record. If you would like a copy of the transcript, please contact Commonwealth Reporting Services. Also, if you have comments to leave, please leave them here at the table, two copies. And If you have not already signed the sheets, panelists, please do so before you leave. Thank you very much. Sorry. We are adjourned. Thank you.